Welcome to Triangle 411, the pulse that moves the Triangle world today. It's a vibrant collection of stories, medical breakthroughs, what's trending, social good, events, and boundless other adventures. A conversation pit of comedians, authors, chefs, sports figures, experts, the common and the uncommon. Here's the host of Triangle 411, Mary Innsbrucker.
Hi, friends. Today, we're talking about death doulas. What is it? What's it about? A death doula can begin an important relationship with someone facing their mortality. An end-of-life doula can restore a sense of the sacred to the process that has become more medicalized and less passionate. Through meaningful, directive, life review and insight into the dying process, there can be a difference in how everyone involved experiences the final journey of life. Indeed, these death doulas are growing in popularity. Of course, that's not surprising, with over 600,000 people in the United States having died from complications with COVID-19. You know, COVID-19, it reset our course. It emphasized how quickly things can change, how precious life is, and how it can end in a second. No wonder, then, that now there are approximately 800 end-of-life doulas around the country. With us today is Martha Blair Heyman, an International End-of-Life Doula Association certified doula. Martha is also a certified hospital layperson, grief coach, and the founder of Together Forward, which offers planning and support to those diagnosed with a life change illness and their loved ones. Martha was recently featured in People magazine, and she is with us here today. Welcome, Martha.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with a little background. Your experience with death began in your 20s when first your father died unexpectedly, and then your little brother was in a car accident.
Yes, that's true. Both of those experiences were completely unexpected and, a new realization that life can end without any notice was part of my experiential library.
And then fast forward to 1993, when you encountered the actual act of watching a life end when your husband became ill. So I'm just kind of wondering if all that propelled you in some way to become an end-of-life doula.
Oh, it absolutely had everything to do with it. My late husband and I spent his last 11 months, he at MD Anderson and myself with our two baby boys in a rented apartment nearby, watching him just decline and also holding on to hope that this leukemia would not take his life. It was a very confusing time. There was nobody to help me figure out how to process any of this. I was feeling things like anger and fear. I couldn't share those with him. I mean, who tells a person who's terminally ill you're angry with them? It just seemed preposterous to have that kind of a conversation. Mm-hmm. He was fearing upsetting me because I'm a new mom and, so he didn't talk to me about any of his fears either. I mean, it was a dreadful scenario, frankly, as when I looked back on it afterwards. We missed many an opportunity to have really magical conversations and important conversations.
So, and this does, you know, a majority of people would probably have a similar experience going through that type of thing. And so it's very good that there's folks like you to help them through this process. And there's several facets to this type of journey. And I'd like to address them one at a time, starting with advanced care planning.
Yes, there are a number of things available for people who want to do advanced care planning. There's the five wishes document that people can print and fill out. There's, I offer to my clients something, an acronym, MIDIO, which is my advanced, my informed decision on video, which is not only a advanced care directive, but it's also a doctor's order, and it's a QR code on a card that's the size of your driver's license. So it's in your wallet all the time. Lots of other advanced care planning documents are on pieces of paper in folders on people's refrigerators. But if I get hit by a car when I'm away from home and the emergency room doesn't know what to do with me, but they can highlight this QR code on their phone and they see a video of me saying, these are the things I want you to do for me and not want you to do for me.
That's interesting. That's very good.
Yeah. It's marvelous.
And I'm glad you include that in what you do, but we're going to go into some other areas too, like deep active listening.
So deep active listening involves helping a dying person explore the meaning of their life. Very often, the fear and regret that swims in a person when they're realizing their life is likely coming to an end sooner than they had planned. And these, when they're taken through sort of their life and their accomplishments and things they've done, people they've met, experience they've had, they come to sort of realize that their life, in fact, was very important. And there were enjoyable things that they have. They might also discover there's somebody that they want to forgive before they die, or perhaps they need to ask forgiveness before they die of someone. It brings a richness. We forget our life story, you know, as we live it, unless we're really intuitively helped to think about aspects of it. In deep active listening, a doula can sit by and find a thread of a story and ask an open-ended question, which sometimes triggers another memory. And then they've remembered something they forgot entirely. We remember the scope of a memory, but sometimes we don't remember the teeny tiny tidbits of a memory. The listening, as opposed to talking, allows a person a platform to sort of be open about that. Maybe they need to discuss fears of their death, and those conversations are uncomfortable to have with your loved ones, but a doula will sit and will listen to what those fears are about dying, about leaving sooner than you plan to.
You know, I like that because in two different ways. One, a lot of people think, you know, why was I here? Did I add any value? Did I make a difference? And I think that going through this, it does draw attention to, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. And, oh, yeah, maybe he wouldn't have graduated from high school if I didn't do X, Y, and Z with him or help her out when she was homeless or whatever it might have been. So that's,
exactly. You
know, and then also, and you mentioned this earlier about you couldn't talk to your husband about certain concerns or fears and vice versa. And so the doula plays an important role and being that connection, that person. Now, when we talk about deep active listening, it sounds almost like the same thing I was going to ask about life review. Are those two different things or are they kind of one and the same?
One can lead into the other. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So then let me ask you, what is reprocessing the dying experience?
After a loved one has died, about, 3 to 5 weeks after the death, when everyone has flown back to their homes, when people are no longer bringing food by, when everybody seems to have gone on or back to their normal lives, a doula will come back and sit with family and loved ones and have each of them talk about the dying experience. What was it like? What do you remember? Very often when people are around a dying loved one, one person will experience or see or hear something that somebody else didn't. Or maybe they were out of the room. Maybe it happened at the same time, but they just missed it. And what happens when they share their experience with each other, someone can say, I remember hearing her, you know, moan out something as she was looking up into the corner of the room and she said, Sam, or something. And another person will say, oh my God, that's their uncle, or, you know, I can't believe you heard that. And suddenly these marvelous discussions take place. And it also is really sort of the foundation for the rest of the grief, because they've talked about it. One of the hardest things after somebody has died is to begin the conversation about the death. And once that's happened and you've created a safe space with other people for that to happen, then you suddenly have this network. So maybe days later you remember something and you can call that person and say, gosh, you know, do you remember when they did this? And it's sort of this communal ritual that keeps that person with them.
And I see that as valuable, because many times when I've lost a loved one, and it's like you said, you're so intense about it at the funeral and through the whole process. And then you go back to your everyday life and it's kind of like, you know, you find yourself saying, wow, you know, it seems like it should not just all be forgotten. It should be just not like back to business as usual. You know, this was my uncle, this was my dad, whatever. And so that's a very valuable service. Now, I think I might have got out of order here a little bit, because we're talking about kind of after the event, but I know you do things like creation of ritual, ceremony, vigil planning. Talk to us about that.
Well, vigil planning is a blueprint, if you will, a plan for last days when a client becomes unresponsive. They can no longer speak for themselves. And it helps those around them, around the bedside, know how to care for them regarding a number of things like, what do they want to be hearing? You know, do they want a sound machine that has waves or rain or singing birds? Do they want to hear lovely classical music? Were they a fan of ZZ Top? I mean, you know, everybody has what brings them joy as far as sounds. Fragrance, what do they want to be smelling? In my vigil plan, I have, you know, pipe tobacco. Pipe tobacco, I rarely smell anymore, but whenever I catch it, I immediately am triggered to my father, which makes me feel lovely and wonderful. Some people love fresh cut grass or the smell of geraniums. And how do they want to be touched? Do they not want to be touched at all? Some people are adverse to that. Do they want their dog at the foot of their bed? Do they want somebody to always be holding their hand or touching their forehead? And then are there any rituals that they want to have happen following their death? Do they want washing of hands and face with a warm cloth? Do they want somebody reading a poem? Lots of times people want a window open to release their spirit, if that's their belief. So that's what a vigil plan begins to do, is it creates, it helps the people around you create an environment of what you want to have happening around you when you can't say, could you please do that? Could you please do that? And by the same token, it's also a blueprint of what you don't want to hear. In my vigil plan, it's, I don't want a TV on anywhere. I don't want to hear the news. I don't want anybody's cell phones dinging. Some people only want important conversations going on around them. They don't want people talking about their grocery list or, you know, maintenance on a car or whatever, because people can still hear. I mean, until the very end, it has been scientifically proven. We can still hear, even though we can't respond to sound, we can still hear. So the vigil plan helps create all of that because, frankly, people at bedside want something to do. So this gives them something to do that is specific to you.
And speaking of loved ones, again, this is not only a process for the person who is passing on, but what you do also helps the loved ones.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So is this for everyone, or how do you know if it's right for you?
If you're seeking companionship and guidance, if you have questions about what is my body going to do when it dies or as it's dying, if you have, you know, a huge support network, maybe you don't need all of the things that a doula provides. Maybe you just need some of the things a doula provides. Maybe you just want the creation of some guided imagery scripts, perhaps. I mean, I know I helped one. I had one client who had a huge support network. It was marvelous, but he wanted to leave behind a legacy project. So I was brought in solely for that reason, to help him create a legacy project. And
What's
then that was all.
What's a legacy project?
So in his instance, a legacy project was... he wanted to be interviewed by his mother. He wanted certain questions asked to him, and he wanted to respond, and he wanted that taped. And we used StoryCorps to do that, which is a library of Congress. It keeps these recordings in the Library of Congress forever. So he was a young man dying in his early 20s. And he wanted a part of him left behind. Sometimes a legacy project is storytelling by drawing on a beautiful scroll. Sometimes a legacy project is a cookbook of the favorite recipes you made for certain people in your family. And we rebuild that specific cookbook with little notes to the person whose recipe was their favorite. It can be a photo album. It can be recordings, audio recordings. It can be any number of things.
Is there any uniqueness between the end-of-life doulas?
Yes, I can speak for myself. Because of my experience, I focus heavily on the vigil planning, because that is where Eddie and I were at a loss. And had I known then what I know now, I could have made his last 2 weeks at home. We finally got back from MD Anderson. I could have made his last 2 weeks at home really special and lovely. So I focus on vigil work. Some other doulas, depending on their life experience, might focus more on legacy projects, if they're very artistic, and you know, that's where they feel called. So yes, there are differences in doula's work.
Everything we're talking about today is so taboo for a lot of people, you know, and it's kind of the best thing you can do for your loved ones is to leave some of this direction. And, you know, if you need the peace and this type of experience, people don't realize your loved ones also often need this type of peace. So how do we normalize the conversation on this topic?
Well, frankly, by allowing it without judgment. Sometimes what makes it more approachable is a thread of humor. One of the things I offer is something I dubbed death over dinner game nights, where I utilize the death deck, which was created by a hospice nurse and a widow who became friends after the death of her husband, and sitting around drinking coffee had this epiphany of why on earth aren't people having these discussions prior to someone's death. So they created a deck of cards threaded with humor that ask questions that that sort of nudge conversations to happen. And so you normalize it by allowing it to happen, you know. And people often are so astounded at how good it feels to talk about it, even the fears about it, even the discomforts about it. I mean, the body knows how to die. It knows how to shut down. It knows how to go from here to there. But there's so much anxiety about how to let a loved one die. And these conversations help eliminate some of that fear and instead create understanding. Mm. And then that creates a beautiful experience for everybody.
Do you know the name of that card game?
Yeah, it's called the Death Deck.
Death Deck. Okay. Very simple. Just in case anybody listening wants to check that out. That seems like a really good idea.
Yeah. It's called the Death Deck. And they just came out with another deck called the EOL deck, the end of life deck, more specifically for the person who is dying. The Death Deck is for anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have these dinners with people who do not have a terminal illness. They're just like me, and they just don't know how to start this conversation. And everybody likes to get together around a table with food. So that's what I create in small groups.
Mm. When is it time to find an end-of-life doula?
Well, doulas can be brought into a person's story at any time. It can be before there's a terminal illness, if they're interested in creating a vigil plan long ahead of time, if they're interested in creating any of the things a doula offers ahead of time, or if they're just interested in having the conversation. Very often I'm brought in after a diagnosis to make sense of it, to help that person tell their family. You know, sometimes I've been brought into somebody's story by a friend who, the person, I had 3 hours with them and then they became unresponsive. And so what little information I did get from them, I learned more about them from their family members nearby. And then lots of my work pertained to the family members and how they could care for this person's body as it moved from here to there, and signs of what to look for. It's never too late. Mm-hmm. Very often at end of life, having an end of life doula helps a family realize when it's time to bring in hospice. For example, I waited far too long before I brought in hospice. It was absurd how long I waited. Mm-hmm. Eddie died within 48 hours of my finally allowing hospice to become part of the conversation.
They're just such hard decisions. You know, even like people, I just was talking to a friend the other day about her mom, and the siblings were all together thinking, well, you know, what kind of casket would she want? You know, would she want wood? Would she want this? And come to find out, they had a conversation with her, and she didn't want that. She wanted her ashes spread in a place that was near and dear to her heart. But again, if they wouldn't have had that conversation, they would have anguished about pine versus something else.
Exactly.
And it's not even in the program. So,
right. And very often a person is even afraid to approach these conversations with their family members. I mean, very often people say what they think is a very loving thing to say, oh, we don't need to talk about that now. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not listening. There's no deep active listening there. If they would stop and pause and listen, they would realize this person needs to tell me something. Mm-hmm. This person is wanting to have a conversation about this.
So, and it's one extreme to another. So this is going to be a tough question because it sounds like you can go from one and to the other with the spectrum of services, but can you ballpark or give me one into another what kind of cost people are looking at to have an end-of-life doula help?
I can't speak for all of us, but I'm sure most of us bill on a sliding scale. I know I do. I know many of the other ones that I know also do. I know that I do a pro bono case a year. it probably ranges anywhere from, and it also depends on people's or doula's education. You know, how much training have they had? Were they also a nurse for most of their life, or you know, that sort of thing? So it's probably around averages $100 an hour. There are packages. I have packages. I know other doulas have packages that incorporate certain components. And again, it also depends on, does this person have a large support network already, or do they have nobody? Mm-hmm.
It gives us some idea, you know, as a start. But again, it's like I said, you could take half your services or 100% of your services.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of broad, but just a little advice. So how would somebody go about finding an end of life doula?
Anelda, who I trained and certified with, is INELDA, is the acronym for the International End of Life Doula Association. They have a doula directory of their trained and certified doulas nationwide and internationally. NEDA, NEDA, which is the National End of Life Doula Association, also has a directory. And you know, in the world of Google, you can probably see if there's one in your town. You know, you can probably Google at this stage, thankfully, end of life doula Sacramento or whatever, mm-hmm. and see if somebody comes up. I do know about the Inelda directory. When you can scope a certain area, and some of us do virtual work too.
Yes, I wanted to ask you about that because you mentioned that you did that. So I really would like to also, if you don't mind, give your specific way to connect, how people could connect with you. And I did want to point out the virtual service because, you know, just in case somebody would really like to invite you into this process with them, but they're not in your area. I love that you offer the virtual. So could you give us your contact info?
Sure. The name of my practice is Together Forward. So it's togetherforward.com or Together Forward Doula. I'm sorry, it's togetherforwarddoula.com or togetherforwarddoula@gmail.com. Either of those will get you to me. But if COVID didn't teach us anything, it taught us that we can absolutely connect without sitting in front of each other. So doula work, while in the beginning, I think we were all slightly frantic, I think we very quickly realized that a great deal of what we can do except being at bedside can be done virtually.
That's good news. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here today.
A pleasure for me. Thank you so much.
Well, we're out of time, so we have to say high five and say goodbye. I'm Mary Innsbrucker for Triangle 411. Today's Pocket, be compassionate.